Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe-Gazette for Sunday, September 20th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. United Way of North Central Iowa raises over $100,000 for COVID-19 relief. When the global pandemic hit the United States in March, the United Way of North Central Iowa knew it needed to do something to help North Iowans. That's when the idea of a COVID-19 relief fund came to fruition. Since then, the UWNCI has worked with sponsors, businesses, and individuals to raise over $100,000 for organizations and individuals in need during the pandemic. When those businesses shut down, a lot of people's income stopped, Chief Executive Officer Jen Aaron said. We didn't really know how long it was going to last. We just knew that we needed to be there for our community because that's what we do at the United Way. So far, the exact number for the funds raised sits at $102,649. According to a pamphlet that displayed how funds were used, over $57,000 was distributed out to 21 different programs in need. The pamphlet lists who the programs were, how much was donated, and what donations were used for. We've been able to help 21 programs so far with everything from increasing their sanitation needs so they can continue to operate safely to upgrading technology so that they can provide services still and help those people in need in North Iowa, Aaron said. United Way also worked with the North Iowa Community Action Organization and the Salvation Army to set aside $40,000 for individual assistance. Funding is used to provide financial assistance that is not available through federal and state assistance programs and is distributed based on those highest in need, the individual assistance box of the pamphlet states. Normally, the UWNCI has corporate sponsors that help with financing events. Due to the coronavirus, there were no events on the calendar this year. That's when Aarons and her team started asking corporate donors to consider donating to the COVID-19 Relief Fund instead of their usual event sponsorship. Aarons says some of these sponsors include big-name corporations like MidAmerican Energy, 3M, Winnebago Industries, Clear Lake Bank and Trust, and First Citizens Bank, among others. When we started it, we didn't know where it was going to lead, so I'm really happy to see that we've been able to raise over $100,000 to help people and nonprofits during this time, Aaron said. Aaron says feedback from the organizations that have received the funds has been positive. She is thrilled that the UWNCI has been able to help out in a time of need. One of the problems is we're just not super well in tooting our own horn. So a lot of this has gone under the radar, Aaron said. But for those programs that we've helped and the individual assistance I know has been really needed and appreciated by those who have gotten it. The nonprofit organization is still accepting donations to the fund. If you would like to donate, you can visit unitedway.nci.org and go to the COVID Relief Fund tab. Mason City Group launches online fundraiser for childhood cancer. An all-day fundraiser that raised more than $25,000 for childhood cancer in 2019 is going online this year. Stomping Out Childhood Cancer will host an online auction from 10 a.m. Monday to 5 p.m. Sunday, September 27th, on its Facebook page. I hope people are willing to open their pockets and help these kids, said Beth Bull, Stomping Out Childhood Cancer Board Treasurer. There are a lot who need our help. The online auction will feature more than 40 donated items, including themed gift baskets, gift certificates, furniture, and a whole array of different things. Photos of the items will be shared in the organization's Facebook event, Stomping Out Childhood Cancer Online Auction, and individuals can participate by bidding in $1 increments until the event ends. Individuals with the highest bids when the auction closes will be notified of a time when they can pick up their item. The Stomping Out Childhood Cancer Board voted unanimously a month ago to cancel its in-person fundraising event, scheduled for Saturday, due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Childhood cancer does not stop because of the pandemic, and the need of North Iowa families for support does not end, the nonprofit's event poster said. The online auction is taking place during Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. Stomping Out Childhood Cancer, a Mason City-based 501c3 nonprofit, was started in 2018 by a group of local parents and family members who have experienced childhood cancer firsthand. Bull said she got involved with the organization because of her niece, Blair, a childhood cancer survivor. "Before my niece Blair was diagnosed, I knew about childhood cancer, but I didn't know how much there was," she said. "It's just so heartbreaking." In 2018, the group hosted its first event at the Surf District Rock and Roll Grill and raised about $12,000 for childhood cancer research and area families. Last year's event, which was held at the North Iowa Event Center, featured a silent auction, a live auction, concession stand, bake sale, bouncy houses, children's games, bags tournament, and more. The Stomping Out Childhood Cancer event raised more than $25,000, Bull said, adding a similar event was planned this year with even more for people to enjoy. "Everybody wanted to come back and do it with us," she said. "That's why this year it was so heartbreaking to cancel it. But we're finding other ways to help these kids and their families." In addition to the online auction, the board plans on selling T-shirts and hosting other fundraisers in the coming weeks and months to support children and families affected by cancer in southern Minnesota and North Iowa, as well as cancer research at Children's Oncology Group. "We're hoping next year things can get back to normal," Bull said. She said the Stomping Out Childhood Cancer Board is grateful for the community support it's received without the in-person event, and it always welcomes new members and volunteers to help with future fundraisers. For more information about Stomping Out Childhood Cancer, visit stompingoutchildhoodcancer.com or follow its Facebook page. McNider Mural brings Mason City families together during pandemic. Over the course of the COVID-19 pandemic, people have found new ways to bond, maybe a socially distanced walk or a mass Zoom call with friends from college. For the Charles H. McNider Art Museum in Mason City, community building has come through painting. In recent days, the museum sponsored a project through its annual festival that allowed up to 12 families to each paint a square for a mural about the vast expanse of outer space and all its wonders. "It's important for people to experience art," Museum Director Edith Blanchard said. "The museum is still open, and we want to make sure people come here, but it's one thing to look at the art, and it's a whole nother thing to do art." The way that it worked is that over several days, one family at a time would come in to paint their own square with relative freedom. There were only light prompts from museum workers. Then, when one family finished, the supplies and area would be cleaned, and then another family would come in to indulge their inner artist. A bulk of the work was done over the 3 days of the festival, but Blanchard said that the last little bit was finished on Wednesday. Soon enough, the completed work will hang in the museum's education hallway. "It really shows all the diverse kinds of art that people like. You have some that are more swirling and mystical, some that are more cartoon-like, some that are realistic, some that are by people who are little. That's important too," Blanchard said. For her, it was important to have such a project for people not just to do a bit of community building, but because a lot of opportunities for activities have fallen by the wayside this year. "A lot of things have been canceled. A lot of things have been postponed. So people have more time on their hands, and we thought this might be a good opportunity for people who might not have done this before to come and give it a try," Blanchard said. "It's a new opportunity for the museum as well, and one that it's more than keen to try again. I definitely think we'll be doing it in the future because it was very successful," Blanchard said. "We really want to encourage people to come and do art safely." Mercy One welcomes new physician. Josue Santos has joined Mercy One Family Medicine Residency as a faculty member and practicing physician. Dr. Santos attended Adventist University in Orlando, Florida, and University of Connecticut School of Medicine in Farmington, Connecticut. He received his postgraduate degree at MAHEC Hendersonville Rural Family Medicine Residency Program, Pardee Hospital, and Blue Ridge Health in Hendersonville, North Carolina. Dr. Santos also served in the 22nd Marine Expeditionary Unit. Santos made the decision to pursue a career in medicine after participating in Bangladesh relief efforts. He says he serves as a physician because he enjoys providing whole-person care, which considers the range of needs for individuals and families. When not working, he enjoys walks on the beach, water sports, flying radio control aircrafts, reading, meeting new people, spending time with family, and learning new skills. Rita Hart, Raising the Federal Retirement Age, a Deal Breaker. Raising the retirement age for Social Security is a deal breaker, said Iowa Democratic congressional candidate Rita Hart. Hart on Wednesday received the endorsement of the Alliance for Retired Americans for her commitment to protecting and strengthening Medicare and Social Security. The Alliance represents more than 4.3 million retirees and community activists nationwide, including more than 30,000 members in Iowa. Hart was joined via video conference by leaders from the Alliance for Retired Americans. "We're going to welcome your leadership because we know through your work we are going to help to expand Social Security coverage and Medicare," Mike McCarthy, president of the Alliance for Retired Americans, said. Hart on Wednesday spoke of the need to protect and strengthen Medicare and Social Security for Iowa seniors. "We need to make sure that we are honoring the commitment that we have to seniors for the earned benefits that they are counting on receiving, and that we are going to create a system that is sustainable, that will be there for our children and our grandchildren," Hart said. She is running for the Congressional District 2 seat, now held by retiring Democratic Representative Dave Loebsack. She will face Republican State Senator Marionette Miller Meeks of Ottumwa. Hart and others on the call criticized Miller Meeks' support for raising the retirement age. Miller Meeks, an eye surgeon and former director of the Iowa Department of Public Health, in a prior run for the seat in 2014, said for the U.S. to prevent sharp breaks in the benefit or tax levels faced by succeeding generations, solutions should include the possibility of raising the federal retirement age of 65. Hart said raising the retirement age is a deal breaker, and that there are much better solutions out there to support entitlement funding. Hart did not elaborate, other than mentioning her plan to lower prescription drug costs by allowing Medicaid to directly negotiate lower drug prices with drug companies. "Not all professionals are the same," Hart said of raising the retirement age. "As we get older, farming doesn't get easier. And so when you're 65, that's a much heavier lift than when you're 30 or 40 years old. And so we need to protect the working class people and make sure that there are other ways we can go about looking at the security of this system. We don't need to raise the age in order to do that." Miller Meeks' campaign said she will fight to strengthen and protect Social Security and Medicare. Rita Hart is using the same old tired, scared tactic about Social Security and Medicare that we hear from Democrats every election year, campaign spokesman Eric Wilson said in an emailed statement. Marionette Miller Meeks knows what it's like to grow up in a poor family that struggles to make ends meet. She knows that Social Security is a safety net and a lifeline for millions of Americans, including members of her own family and many friends. She is not going to support any legislation that will jeopardize their financial security. Guest columnist Michelle Sprout Murray. Photos are the pause button on life. "I was lucky enough to come from a family who valued photographs. To some, the rooms of photos might seem a bit excessive, but to me, it's like having my own museum of moments. One positive thing to come out of the pandemic has been a little extra time to peruse the plethora of pictures in my mom's house. Recently, I posted a few old pictures on Facebook to commemorate Grandparents' Day, and it was interesting to read the comments from a couple of my older cousins. One picture was of my paternal grandparents sitting on their couch with an impish 2-year-old me. This simple picture sparked memories for my cousins, which included playing with a decorative pillow and vividly recalling the scent of that couch. If people were to take a similar picture today, they'd be sure to crop out any extraneous object, such as the pillow and the couch, just to make it more worthy of sharing. Back in those days, however, the picture focused on the people and their surroundings. Who knew that circular orange-brown gold knit pillow could stay in someone's memory for so long? Or how about an orange-flowered couch that seemingly the entire nation owned at one point? If those old pictures had been perfect, perhaps we would never get to enjoy those little details today. I just came across a quote from photographer and photojournalist Ty Holland that should become my family's motto. A photograph is the pause button on life. We are usually too busy to notice the minutiae of life when living it. Someday we'll wax nostalgic upon coming across pictures of how we lived these days and double the warm, fuzzy feelings when uncovering pictures of our family members, no matter if they are perfect or not. I miss getting to know my maternal grandmother as she died way before I was born, but looking at her sweet smile in pictures throughout her years makes me feel a certain connection. The way she held a couple puppies so lovingly in her arms leads me to believe we would have been great friends as well as relatives. My maternal grandfather knew me for only a few years before his untimely death due to a car accident. A picture of him holding my younger cousin on one knee and me on another brings a smile to my face just about as large as his in the photo itself. I guess if I ever had any doubt that I was loved, all I'd have to do is consult a few old pictures for reassurance. At least, that's what my mom told me as she uncovered yet another of my baby albums I had never seen. Guest columnist Sharon Randall. Little things in life mean a lot. Little things mean a lot. Here's a memory I'll not soon forget. I woke in a hotel room, sunlight on my face. Where was I? Why was I there? Slowly, it started coming back to me. I'd flown thousands of miles to speak at a fundraiser for some worthy cause that, for the life of me, I could not seem to recall. It was scheduled to take place that morning in the conference room downstairs. I'd stayed up late the night before polishing my speech. As keynote speaker, I would talk while everyone else ate, starting at 9:15 sharp. No hurry. I liked to take my time getting ready. I'd set the clock by the bed for 7 a.m. But wait, I hadn't heard the alarm. Maybe it wasn't 7 yet? Changing time zones always throws me. I squinted at the clock and read, 9:05 a.m. And so it began, a frantic comedy of errors that felt a lot like my worst nightmare. No time to shower, brush my teeth, or use a curling iron. I grabbed my suit out of the closet, then stood, horrified, staring at my suitcase. The only top I had packed to wear was my husband's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles t-shirt. Also, I had no shoes. Not the fancy ones I'd planned to wear, or even the ugly ones I'd worn on the plane. I finally found one of the uglies, but not its mate. If need be, I could speak in a Ninja Turtles t-shirt, with no makeup and frizzy hair, but not half barefoot in one shoe. The clock said 9:15. Time to get serious. I would call the chairman of the event. Fred? Bill? What was his name? To tell him I was running just a tiny bit late and ask him if I could please borrow his shoes. I never made that call. My phone was dead. I forgot to bring a charger, and the room phone by the bed kept telling me to hang up and dial 911. Just when it seemed it could not possibly get worse, I woke up and realized I was dreaming. Some days it's worth waking up to be reminded, no matter how bad things seem, they could be worse. Waking up from a bad dream is a small thing, but it made me hugely happy. It's always the little things that seem to keep me afloat, that keep me walking on water when I feel like I'm about to drown. A phone call from one of my kids just calling to talk. A hug from a grandkid just wanting a hug. A laugh shared with my husband laughing at ourselves. A FaceTime kiss from a toddler babbling Nana. A note from a reader saying she and her mother were praying for our safety, hoping our house didn't burn. A thin patch of blue sky and a thick cloud of smoke. An act of kindness. A word of praise. An answered prayer for help. A quiet reassurance of hope. Little things change the world. This summer has been a living nightmare. The pandemic has caused us to live in fear of a deadly virus, profoundly changing our way of life. And more than a dozen states, especially California, the place my loved ones and I call home, have battled wildfires unlike any we've ever seen. In a matter of weeks, my husband and I watched three separate blazes burn near our house. One of them forced us to evacuate for 8 days. Thanks be to the grace of God and the heroic efforts of firefighters, our place was spared, but some 50 homes nearby were destroyed. Fires continue to burn in every direction. Countless lives have been lost, and we're all wearing masks, not only for COVID-19, but also for toxic smoke. Years ago, after my first husband died, a friend sent me these lovely words. Then, when it seems we will never smile again, life comes back. I want to believe that one day soon the pandemic and wildfires and other fears will end. We will wake up to find the nightmare is finally over, and life will come back more beautiful, more precious than ever before. Until then, I'll count on little things to keep me afloat. Guest columnist John Skipper, taking time for self-evaluation. I mentioned in previous columns that North Iowans looking toward a brighter future often mention characteristics that are associated with the fruit of the Spirit as professed in the Bible in Galatians 5, 22 and 23. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Whether you are a Christian or not, it's hard to deny the value of living by the fruit of the Spirit. We all ought to have a code of ethics on which we judge ourselves from time to time. I decided to rate myself on how well I am doing with the fruit, and I invite you to do the same. In my self-evaluation, I determined I was doing pretty well with love and joy and peace and kindness, although there's always room for improvement. But I sometimes come up short with two of them, patience and self-control. I think I've done pretty well in handling life's biggest challenges, enduring the loss of a job, the death of a spouse, and the onset of a serious illness, all in the space of 2 years, for example. But it's the little things in life, and not finding matching socks, misplacing the TV remote or my cell phone, running out of postage stamps, that can drive me nuts. In these circumstances, I'm not real good at either patience or self-control. Taking all of this into consideration, I am once again thinking about abandoning something that rattles me unnecessarily, social media and cable news hogwash. My generation listened to Walter Cronkite and Huntley and Brinkley. This generation listens to Rachel Maddow and Sean Hannity. We are no longer encouraged to be informed. We are encouraged to be enraged. Facebook is another example of fool's gold. I am distressed by all of the mean-spirited political diatribe that flows through its veins, the number of people who consider themselves righteous and yet spew hatred without giving it a second thought. For instance, despite what I read, I don't believe either President Trump or Joe Biden is Satan. They are two men with polar opposite political views and conduct themselves in polar opposite ways. But the world will not come to an end, no matter which one of them is elected. I don't understand how people who present themselves as loving individuals in person can express hatred on social media to people who disagree with them. In the past, I have threatened to give up Facebook because it is such a colossal waste of time. I hooked onto it years ago because it was a way of keeping track of my kids and grandchildren who live in different parts of the country. And that's what I look for every day. But in that search, I find myself reading a lot of the verbal vomit that pops up on the screen, and then I get mad. And there you go, patience and self-control, out the window, and it's my fault for letting it happen. So, should I give it up, tune it all out, or just do better in dealing with it? Decisions, decisions. I could go on and on, but right now I have to go look for my cell phone. A letter to the editor. Northwood Kensett poster backlash was heartbreaking. When I read the initial article regarding the Northwood Kensett poster by Jody Bachtel and the decision to not use it as a fundraiser, citing backlash from those protesters opposing law enforcement as the reason, it was heartbreaking. This is another example of the total lack of respect toward those in elected office and towards humanity in general. It is sad when a good thing is demonized by those who contribute nothing positive themselves, but continue to call good evil, and to call evil good. Therefore, I was pleasantly surprised you reversed your decision and are going forward with the posters, acknowledging and honoring law enforcement as well as the NK sports teams. I encourage you to not cave into the negative zealots. The constant mantra from the radical left with name-calling, lack of civility in obeying our nation's laws, knee-jerk reaction to reporters who are not really reporting, just stating opinion, and whose news articles do not tell the whole story, peaceful protests that are not peaceful, the destruction of public and private property, has to stop. If you do not love our country, the United States of America, leave. Go where your hatred and destruction is a way of life and don't come back. Signed, Louise Nath, Forest City. Letter to the editor. Climate change, its consequences obvious, worsening. I ran early last Sunday morning. It was a beautiful day, and I found myself repeating the verse from Psalm 118. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Then I wondered if West Coast residents, living in the hellish conditions we see on TV, could say this, or if the people on the Gulf and Atlantic coasts who have been hit by increasingly frequent and severe tropical storms. Climate change and its consequences are obvious and are worsening. The impact in Iowa has so far been limited to warming winters and wetter springs. Climate scientists predict that shortly we will also see hotter and drier summers with significant effects on farming. We humans are causing climate change, mainly by burning enormous amounts of fossil fuels. We can change this. We must do this together. Doing so will require committed political leadership at all levels, but particularly by the president. Before you vote, please learn what the candidates plan to do about climate change. Signed, Bruce Trimble, Mason City. A letter to the editor. A vote for Abela is a vote for Iowa, U.S. Simon is running for the Republican seat in the Iowa lower house of representatives in District 53. Simon immigrated to the United States in 1986 and became a citizen in 2000. He is married with two children. Simon is very proud to be an American citizen and knows the cost of freedom. He was born in Malta and completed his education in the U.S. Simon Abela has a Bachelor's of Science in Environmental Science and Master's in Environmental Management and Health and Safety. He speaks five languages fluently and has worked for the Department of Defense and the U.S. military, responsible for all environmental projects in Iraq, Spain, and Kyrgyzstan. He has published several papers on environmental issues and conducted several projects in Europe and the Middle East. A vote for Simon would mean that he supports pro-life, that life begins at conception. An excellent standard for education. Our current education system is based as one cookie cutter for all. America is the 20th place in education ratings. Finland has the best education system. Russia surpasses the American education system. Even our state of Iowa has tumbled in our ratings since the introduction of IASB 573. He does not believe in Common Core. Each child is an individual with individual learning capacities. He supports our military and its mission. He believes all should stand for the national anthem and that there is no room for disrespecting our flag or our national anthem. Signed, Nancy Rockman, Mason City. A letter to the editor. Trump's promises? 1. Every rational person knew Mexico wasn't going to pay billions for a wall it didn't want. Some old fencing has been replaced, but only 5 miles of new wall has been built, and Mexico hasn't paid for any. So, who is going to pay for it? Not Mexico. 2. Repealing Obamacare. Eliminating the Affordable Care Act was a key plank of Trump and the GOP platform, but the GOP-controlled Congress tried and failed to kill the law in 2017. Republicans have never had a ready plan anyway, and 51% of Americans now approve of the ACA, and only 36% don't approve. 3. Try not to laugh, but in 2016, Trump said he'd eliminate the national debt in 8 years, due to his mastery of debt as a businessman. He must have been referring to his 13 failed businesses and 6 bankruptcies. Only Deutsche Bank would loan him money. He also bragged that his plan would cut federal spending by 1% and yield savings of $1 trillion. Before the coronavirus, the national debt rose $3.1 trillion, in part due to the 2017 tax cuts for the rich. Since last January, the debt has soared by another $2.5 trillion due to mass unemployment, cuts in revenue, and trillions in new stimulus spending, bringing total debt to $5.6 trillion, more than any post-war president. 4. In 2016, in assailing the Obama economy, Trump said he would grow the economy up to 4% per year. The best he has done is 3%, but Obama's last 3 years were better than Trump's first 3 years. 5. Releasing his tax returns. He has promised for 5 years he would release them, and we know that ain't going to happen, and it ain't because of any audits. We'll visit about COVID next time. Trump's guillotine. Signed, Steve Epperly, Mason City. You're listening to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Sunday, September 20th, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Scott B. Thomas, 1975 to 2020. Scott Brandon Thomas, 44, of Mason City, died Tuesday, December 31st, 2019, at Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center in Mason City. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, no services will be scheduled. Per his family's wishes, Scott's body was taken to the Iowa Donor Network prior to being cremated, and a private family celebration of life will be held at a later date. Scott was born September 7, 1975, the son of Lewis and Barbara Wenger Thomas in Waverly. He grew up and attended school in Waverly, Cedar Falls, and La Crosse, Wisconsin, completing his special education curriculum in 1994. Following completion of schooling, Scott moved to Opportunity Village in Clear Lake and was employed through their work center. Scott enjoyed spending time outdoors, going to parks, and loved animals, especially dogs and horses. He also liked cars and trucks. Scott is survived by his parents, Lewis and Barbara of Cedar Falls and Vero Beach, Florida, brother Sean Thomas and spouse Abby of Olympia, Washington, nephew Mason Thomas, grandmother Lila Bench Wenger of Heston, Kansas, and many aunts, uncles, and cousins. He was preceded in death by his grandparents, Paul Wenger and Gerald and Alice Thomas. Evelyn Frances Evie Buser, 1944 to 2020. Evelyn Frances Evie Buser, 76, passed away Saturday, September 19th, at Westview Care Center in Britt. Per Evelyn's wishes, no services will be held. Interment will take place at a later date at the Rockwell Cemetery. Evelyn was born September 9, 1944, the daughter of Edward and Gertrude Bowman Floody of Castilia. She was a graduate of Postville High School's class of 1962. After graduation, she started working for Mercy up until her retirement in 2004. On August 20, 1966, in Rose Creek, Minnesota, Evelyn married Harold Dean Buser. To this union, one daughter, Paula Ray, was born. Collecting antiques was something Evie did all her life, filling her home with her favorite things. Being a grandma was a highlight of her life. Those left to cherish memories of Evie are her husband of 54 years, Dean Buser. Children, Paula Klein and spouse Jeff, Jeff Carney and spouse Pam. Grandchildren, Lucas, Nicholas, Skylar, and Alex. Great-grandchildren, Braxton, Emerson, and Layton. Sisters, Marcia and Patsy. Nieces and nephews, Kevin, Julie, Jenny, Jessica, and Elise, as well as countless extended family and great friends. Evie is preceded in death by her parents and her sister, Laura. Cheryl Etchen, 1951 to 2020. Cheryl Etchen, 68, of Mason City, unexpectedly passed away in her home. She went to meet her Lord and loved ones on September 13th. A private family service was held. Sherry was born in 1951 to Merle and LaVon Catter Etchen in rural Clear Lake. She graduated from Clear Lake High School and received her BA from Iowa University, where she was president of her sorority and graduated with a 4.0. During her career, Sherry worked for Shell Oil Company, World Auto Parts, and Target. Sherry enjoyed gardening, cooking, and spending time with her family and cats. She especially loved traveling to Minneapolis throughout the year to relax with family and attend special events like the Minnesota State Fair and Renaissance Festival. Sherry was a member of the St. James Lutheran Church. Sherry is survived by her two sisters, Debbie and spouse Mark Nelson of San Diego, California, and Lori of Golden Valley, Minnesota. Her nephew, Jason Youngblood, and spouse Lisa of San Antonio, Texas. Two great-nieces, Caitlin and Mia, and many cousins. Sherry is also survived by her two special cats, Kitsy and Callie, and a niece dog, Blondie. Preceding Sherry in death were her parents, Merle in 1982 and LaVon in 2019, and extended family members. Memorials may be directed to Lori Etchen at 1905 Flag Avenue North, Golden Valley, Minnesota 55427, or to the Humane Society of Northern Iowa. Online condolences may be left for the family at MajorErickSonFuneralHome.com. And Erickson is E-R-I-C-K-S-O-N. Doris M. Johnson. Doris M. Johnson, 91, of Forest City, died peacefully on Thursday, September 17th, at the Good Samaritan Center in Forest City. Funeral services will be held 11 a.m. Monday, September 21st, at the Calvary Baptist Church in Forest City, with Pastor Doug Farrell officiating. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the services at the church on Monday. Burial will be held in the Madison Township Cemetery in Forest City. Online condolences may be left for the family at shotfuneralhomes.com, and Schott is S-C-H-O-T-T. Gordon E. Sehauer. Gordon E. Sehauer, 40, of Mason City, passed away Friday, September 18th. Arrangements are pending with Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapels. Thelma V. Bonn. Thelma V. Bonn, 89, of Garner, passed away Friday, September 18th, at Mercy One North Iowa Hospice in Mason City. Services are pending at Cataldo Funeral Home. Stephen L. Keller. Stephen Lynn Keller, 70, passed away Friday, September 18th, at Nora Springs Care Center in Nora Springs. A memorial service will be held 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, September 23rd, at Scheckler Colonial Chapel, 114 North Hawkeye Avenue in Nora Springs, with Pastor Sue Simmons officiating. Interment will take place at the West St. Charles Cemetery, 2068 March Avenue in Charles City. Merle V. Marshall. Merle Vincent Marshall, 80, of Garner, died Thursday, September 17th, at his home. Per Merle's wishes, his body has been cremated and a memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, September 25th at Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 310 First Avenue North in Clear Lake. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday, September 24th at the funeral home in Clear Lake. Family suggests memorial contributions to Mayo Clinic Cancer Center Research in Rochester, Minnesota. Jane M. Lupkus. Jane Marie Lupkus, 61, of Joyce, died Friday, September 11th at Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center in Mason City. A private memorial service will be held Saturday, October 3rd at Zion Lutheran Church, 112 North 4th Street in Clear Lake, with Reverend Al Berg officiating. A public celebration of life will be held from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Family Farm, 804 425th Street in Kensett, following the service on Saturday. Jane's memorial service will be recorded and available for viewing on the Colonial Chapel website under her tribute page following the service. Interment will be held at Washington Reformed Church in Ackley at a later date. Memorials can be directed to the family to be distributed to a variety of causes that were meaningful to Jane. Pete J. Porro, 1931 to 2020. Pete died September 18th peacefully at his home, surrounded by his loved ones. He was born April 3rd, 1931 in Ottumwa to adopted parents, Petro and Blank Fisher Porro. Pete graduated from Mason City High School, Mason City Junior College. He attended University of Iowa for a year and completed his Bachelor of Technology from the University of Northern Iowa. He married Margaret Jean Badker in Mason City at St. John's Episcopal Church on July 16, 1953. Pete spent several years at Goodwill Industries, finished his career at Hawkeye Chapter of the American Red Cross as Director of Disaster Services. His position took him to 54 national, one international disaster in Iraq during Desert Storm. Pete is survived by his wife of 67 years, Jean, son Mike and spouse Jean of Davenport, daughters Don Larson of Cedar Falls and Kelly Mark and spouse Ken of Hanlontown, 6 grandchildren and 9 great-grandchildren and 1 on the way. According to his wishes, there are no visitation or services. After cremation, his ashes will be in the columbarium located at St. John's Episcopal Church in Mason City. Memorials may be directed to the family at 2603 Orchard Drive, Suite 323, Cedar Falls, Iowa, 50613. Joanne J. Stoll Ronning, 1934 to 2020. Joanne Herber Stoll Ronning, daughter of Alvald A.B. and Blanche Stulen Stoll, was born August 30, 1934 in Kanawha. Joanne shared her gifts of love, laughter, and music with many camp staff, students, nursing home residents, and congregations. She loved life and always looked for the good in people and lifted them up. Her faith in God and her attitude of gratitude were part of her shining personality. One of her classmates at Waldorf College wrote in her yearbook, "To know her is to love her, and everybody knows her." Survivors include her three children and their families, David Ronning of Des Moines, Ruthie Parrish of Glenwood Springs, Colorado, and her children, Alexander and Victoria, Mary Jornt and spouse Mark of St. Louis Park, Minnesota, and their children, Andrew and Nathan. Additional survivors include her sister, Vivian Landvik of Port Angeles, Washington, sister-in-law, Kathy Helmus of Eugene, Oregon, and many wonderful nieces, nephews, and friends. She was preceded in death by her husband, Mark Ronning, her parents, her stepfather, Karsten Ronning, her brother, John Stoll, and her sister, Doris Sunwall. Joanne died peacefully at Emerald Crest of Minnetonka on September 16th. Mary was by her side, and David and Ruthie serenaded her into heaven by singing some of her favorite hymns to her via speakerphone from Iowa and Colorado. A celebration of life will be planned at a later date. Memorial gifts in Joanne's name may be given to Emerald Crest of Minnetonka, Minnesota, Good Samaritan Society in Forest City, Metagosh Ministries of Bottineau, North Dakota. Sharon A. Shook, 1947 to 2020. Sharon Ann Shook, 72, of Clear Lake, died Monday, September 14th at Mercy One North Iowa Hospice in Mason City. Per Sharon's wishes, her body has been cremated and no services are scheduled at this time. Interment will be at Clear Lake Cemetery. Contributions may be directed to Sharon's family for a special memorial in her memory. Sharon was born November 8, 1947, the daughter of Arthur and Louisa Brady Stroman in Forest City. She married Larry Shook on January 20, 1968, in the Little Brown Church in Nashua. A graduate of Forest City High School, Sharon earned a degree from Hamilton Business College in Mason City. She worked at Unisys and Come and Go for most of her career before retiring. Sharon enjoyed arts and crafts, traveling, cooking, but most of all, spending time with family and friends. Sharon is survived by her husband, Larry Shook of Clear Lake, three children, Neil Shook and spouse Cammy Dixon, Julie Muth and spouse Shane, and Corey Shook and spouse Todd Cryer, two grandchildren, Kyla and Kyan Muth, and siblings, Bob Olson, Dennis Stroman, and John McCorkle. She was preceded in death by her parents. Guest columnist Candy Schickel. Trump's behavior doesn't reflect traditional family values. As a longtime registered Republican, I was so concerned about our country under President Trump's leadership that I felt compelled to switch parties in order to participate in the Democratic caucuses this year. I have been asked how I could do this. It was difficult because I have been actively involved in the Republican Party over the years, including being co-chair of the Cerro Gordo County Republican caucuses. However, I am an American first and need to put politics aside and support the person who is overall best for our country. I agree with President Trump on protecting the unborn and acknowledge that we have had a strong economy for most of his term. However, to be honest, I don't think President Trump actually embodies true Republican values and principles. His rude behavior, troubling tweets, and divisive comments do not reflect traditional family values. Our soaring national debt of $20.53 trillion and $3.3 trillion budget deficit, even before COVID-19, are not reflective of fiscally conservative government. Unfortunately, President Trump has followed President Obama's lead with his frequent executive orders, which are contrary to Republican principles of limited government. His recent executive order for a cut of the payroll tax, which funds retirement benefits, will likely restrict Social Security and Medicare benefits for future retirees. After taking action to protect us by restricting flights with China on January 31st, President Trump minimized COVID-19, saying it was similar to the flu. He failed to exert national leadership and withheld pertinent information. There are audio tapes from February in which President Trump tells a reporter that the virus is deadly stuff and spreads through the air. On March 19th, the president tells the reporter his strategy of playing it down because I don't want to create a panic. Subsequently, over 190,000 Americans, many with pre-existing conditions that were not otherwise life-threatening, have died from COVID-19. Over 6.4 million Americans have had confirmed cases. For all of the above reasons, I am supporting Joe Biden, a man known for his steadiness and decency. As a U.S. Senator and Vice President, he worked with Republicans to get things done in the legislature, which is very much needed now. He has vast national and international experience from his 8 years as Vice President. In addition, he has pledged to provide the national leadership necessary for our economy to stabilize and let people get back to work. Joe Biden wants to heal the divisions in our country and do what is best for our nation as a whole. In his book, Promise Me, Dad, Joe writes of his basic conviction that the first duty of a public servant is to help bring people together in times of crisis or division, to show respect for everybody at the table, and to find a safe way forward. That is exactly what our nation needs during these turbulent times. Guest columnist Barbara Hovland. Barbara Hovland is the founder of Justice for Our Iowa Children and the president of the Northern Lights Alliance for the Homeless. Speak up about child sex abuse, human trafficking. On August 21st, a small but mighty group of citizens joined me for a peaceful walk to bring awareness to child sex abuse and human trafficking. We walked down Delaware Avenue, looping around to the county courthouse, where we stopped to pray and speak. Here is an excerpt from my speech. According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, after drug dealing, human trafficking is tied with arms dealing as the second largest criminal industry in the world, generating about $32 billion a year. The average age that U.S. citizens are first used for commercial sex is 12 to 14. WHO did a story in 2016 and states that human trafficking touches nearly every town in Iowa. It's often hard for people to believe it's happening in their own community. Their pictures and description get posted to websites. One example, Backpage. Polk County saw a 45% increase in the number of persons being offered for sale during the NCAA tournaments. Another example is the Iowa State Fair. They are not trafficked at the fair, but the area surrounding, that is, hotels, apartments, etc. I-35 and I-80 are a prime location for trafficking. As of August 20th, 2020, on the iowasexoffender.gov website, there are 5,988 registered sex offenders in Iowa. 75 of those are unlocated or missing. Currently, Iowa law states, criminal charges in child sex abuse cases must be brought within 15 years after the victim turns 18. Civil cases are 4 years. Children are powerless. Many block out their abuse. Pedophiles groom their victims and convince them that it is okay or normal. It can take years of therapy for a victim to realize they were abused and it wasn't their fault. The average age for an abuse victim to come forward is 52, and only about 12% of sex abuse cases ever get reported. Pedophiles know the statute of limitations in their state and use it to their advantage. Pedophilia is not a sexual preference, and it should never be legal. In 2018, a TED speaker, Miriam Hine, stated, "Pedophilia is a natural sex orientation and that it is like any other sexual orientation." MAP Pride, which is Minor Attracted People, is a movement that appears on underground social media sites, Tumblr. MAP accounts appear to have children's cartoon characters as their profile pictures. If you don't believe MAPs exist, go to b4uact.org, and that's the letter B, the numeral 4, the letter U, ACT.org. Here is their mission statement: to publicly promote professional services and resources for self-identified individuals who are sexually attracted to children. Diversity is recognized and respected as their values. In 2011, B Before4YouAct.org held a conference in Baltimore to normalize pedophilia. A group of researchers from prominent U.S. universities were in attendance, and according to their website, their goal was to discuss ways to revise the American Psychological Association classification of pedophilia. As we live in the current environment with COVID-19 in the news cycle constantly, I wonder why our media and society will not speak about the daily cases of child sexual abuse and human trafficking. Is it because the topic is so horrendous that, if we hear about it and are forced to acknowledge it is truly happening, then we must deal with it and find a solution? Why is this not considered a pandemic? Thousands of innocent children every year in this country suffer and die. Guest columnist Lowell Washburn, Outdoor Odds and Ends. Triplets. Joyce Klunder called the other day. She wanted to report that she had just seen a white-tailed deer with fawns near the entrance of the Ventura Heights bike trail. Although seeing a doe with her spotted offspring is always a heartwarming sight, it usually doesn't warrant a phone call. It is, in fact, a common sight for those who spend much time poking around in the out-of-doors. But this doe was special. Instead of being followed by one or even two fawns, this steer was accompanied by a total of three spindle-legged youngsters. Now, it's a well-known fact that Iowa boasts one of the healthiest deer herds to be found anywhere in North America. Supplied with quality year-round food sources, most does are able to produce a single fawn each spring. Many does go a step further and produce twins. Sets of triplets are much rarer, of course, so much so that most folks will never see one. I've only been able to enjoy the thrill of seeing triplet fawns a couple of times in my life. My last sighting was in the summer of 2019, ironically at the Ventura Heights, the same spot where Joyce Klunder is reporting her triplet whitetails. Klunder has spotted the deer on more than one occasion this year. As we narrowed down the exact location of this year's sightings, we determined that the doe and her fawns were within yards of where I saw and photographed last year's group of triplets. Although the theory lacks hard evidence, there is a strong circumstantial case that this same doe has produced six fawns at Ventura Heights during the past two summers. Amazing! This doesn't happen every day. I'd say that it's worth the drive to try and spot the deer for yourself. Hummingbirds. Following weeks of warm and dry weather, the second week of September delivered the season's first blast of northerly winds and dramatically cooler temperatures. In extreme cases, the mercury briefly hovered just a few degrees above freezing. For ruby-throated hummingbirds, the rapid downturn in temps was a clear signal to head for warmer climes. Although the annual September migration was already underway, the flight quickly escalated into what will be remembered by area birders as a truly remarkable event. The intensity of the migration became most evident at backyard nectar feeders, where sudden and impressive gatherings of hummingbirds swarmed like bees. There was good reason for the birds' apparent urgency to feed. For a creature weighing less than a quarter of an ounce, long-distance migrations present a rigorous challenge. While winging its way to Central America, a hummingbird may consume up to half its weight in nectar or liquid sugar each day. Backyard feeders save time and conserve energy by providing travel-weary migrants with an unlimited quantity of high-octane fuel in one spot. For migrating ruby throats, feeders are worth their weight in gold. Migrating from as far north as Ontario, Canada, the most grueling phase of the hummingbird's annual fall flight begins on the shores of our southern coastline. Guided by starry constellations and powered by wings churning at more than 50 beats per second, hummingbirds leave the Texas mainland and head directly across the Gulf of Mexico. Exhausting stored fuel reserves and pushing physical endurance to the limit, the birds will cross the entire watery expanse in a single, nonstop, 500-mile nighttime flight. For a bird with a wingspan of only 4 inches, the Mad Dash Marathon represents an incredible achievement. Iowa teal season. This year's special teal season concluded on September 16th, and although this year's harvest surveys are still incomplete, early indications are that the 2020 teal season will go down as one of the best since the special hunts were initiated in 2014. Wildlife biologists noted that a series of well-timed weather fronts caused large numbers of blue-winged teal to migrate into the state during this year's 16-day early season. Iowa's regular all-species duck season begins September 26th. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe-Gazette for Sunday, September 20th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.